You're with SBS Spice.
Welcome back to SBS Spice. I'm Suhaila Sharif. With the internet lecturing more young people to touch grass, I reckon SBS may have the best solution in proving you actually have. Survival reality series Alone Australia has taken place on SBS for 4 seasons now, documenting extraordinary stories of endurance, ingenuity, and resilience. Alone Australia's executive producer, Rima Dea, is the driving force behind the series, from selecting the marvelous locations to many restless days and nights monitoring the contestants who participate for their chance to win $250,000. With season 4 now well underway in the Arctic Circle, which you can watch every Wednesday, 7:30 p.m. on SBS and SBS On Demand, she joins me on SBS Spice to unravel how the series comes together. Rima, thank you so much for joining me on SBS Spice.
Thanks for having me, Suhaila.
You've produced an array of Australian reality TV shows. What made you want to get behind Alone Australia on SBS?
Look, I think there's something about this series that spoke to me before I got to make it. I was a big fan of the format, but knowing that it was going to be on SBS, I knew that the authenticity of the series was going to be preserved. And there's something special about working with SBS in terms of the diversity charter. It means that we are open to exploring things that this series may not be open to in terms of the type of cast that we have on this show and the way that we explore, the way that we define Survivor. And I think that's the blessing of doing it with SBS. We don't define a survivor on this show or someone who is capable of wild living in the traditional sense. You know, it's not that person who's necessarily gone to survival school and learnt one way of living in the wild. It celebrates all sorts of different ways of coming at this idea of living in the wild.
I would love to ask you, how do you define a survivor?
I think a survivor is anyone who is capable of pushing themselves beyond what they thought they were capable of and coming out the other end, whether it's as long as they're alive, technically they're a survivor on the other end, yeah. Right? But really it's anyone who is willing to stand up and have a go at this and does the work and is able to somehow grow. Survival doesn't necessarily mean that you have to, you know, conquer or fight. It just means that you have to live. And if you can get to the point where you push past discomfort and really learn something or grown, then you're a survivor of whatever that obstacle was that you overcame.
I love that definition. For our listeners who may not be familiar with the format of Alone Australia, can you please explain how the show works?
Yeah. Alone Australia takes 10 different people from all walks of life and all different backgrounds with a proven sense of competency. We need to make sure that they're going to be able to keep themselves alive, and with nothing but one backpack full of clothes and 10 items that they've chosen from a select list, we drop them off in a remote area of the wilderness, completely isolated from each other, completely isolated from the outside world, in 10 completely remote locations. We drop them off, we teach them how to use cameras, and we leave them there to survive. They have to try and fend for themselves, keep themselves fed, hydrated, warm and dry, and they have to film the experience. And then one by one, when they've had enough, they can tap out. They've got a sat phone and they give us a call and the production comes in and gets them. And the last person standing is the winner and takes home $250,000, which is a pretty decent prize on TV.
Yeah, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it because I feel like it's my ego getting in the way, being like, I could do this. Like, drop me in the middle of the Arctic Circle and I'll get through it. But it is a show where you're placed in the middle of such a remote location with a 12-kilometer radius between you and the next person. It's so unique in, you know, stretching people to their limits when it comes to survival skills and also mental, emotional, and physical skills. Across the show's 4 seasons, participants have been placed in the rugged bush of Tasmania to the serene South Island of Aotearoa, New Zealand, and now the freezing Arctic Circle of Northern Finland. What do you consider when selecting the locations participants must survive in?
Oh, there's a whole range of things. I mean, we want to make sure that there is enough in that landscape for people to be able to survive on, whether it's hunting or fishing or foraging. We need to make sure that there's a water source. We need to make sure that we can access them if we need to drop them off and to pick them up. And we're also, when we're looking for those areas, we're also looking to learn. It's fun for the audience. I'm sure you've noticed it, Sahela, when you're watching. The learnings about the First Nations people that lived on that land is always part of the story, because the land itself becomes almost like the main character. Yeah. Which is probably why it's exciting that we've gone to Finland this year, because you've got the Arctic Circle, which is quite foreign to a lot of Aussies. I think, well, we learnt a lot about the Arctic by going there, and I think a lot of Aussies watching the show are sort of going, oh, I had no idea. I thought it was white all year round, or where are the polar bears, you know? So yeah. There's an element of education. So we're always excited to find a location where we're going to learn something new, not just about the survival, but about the landscape and what it does to you as a human as well. So
yeah,
a whole range of factors.
And it's so interesting to have like a bunch of Aussies in Finland, because I think we're so accustomed to such warm climates. We love our summers, we love being in the sun, and it seems like Finland is quite the opposite to that, even in the summer months, because it's quite dark and, you know, it can get quite extreme with the weather. So it is so cool to see season 4 rolling out now. We're almost towards the tail end of it now, and I was watching an episode this week's episode, and it looks like some of the contestants are at their wit's end as well, so I'm keen to see how it pans out. I hesitate to call them survivalists, because there's something about them all having such unique skill sets. It seems like there's more behind their motivations on an emotional and mental level to get through this, rather than them all being prepared to survive such different climates and conditions. What are the qualities or levels of experience that you're looking for when you're selecting the participants?
I think, do you know what, Sahela, you've nailed it, and I'm really glad that you see that watching the show, that they have completely different reasons for being there, and they have completely different backgrounds in terms of what brought them there.
Yeah, every story is unique. They're all unique contestants, which is so lovely to see, because it kind of puts it in my head that, you know, anyone is kind of capable of also being part of the show. You don't have to be a certain cut of person to be able to do it.
Well, that's what we hope for, because, I mean, that's what makes it interesting, right? Like if you had 10 people who were like G.I. Joes who could get out there and had, you know, survival training and had done every course that there is in that traditional one school, it would kind of be a boring show, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And I think what we want is that we want for everyone sat on the couch watching it to be able to relate to someone and to feel like they could do it, because it's almost like that plane crash scenario that we play out, or that zombie apocalypse thing where we go, what would you do? And we always wonder what we would do. And I think if there's someone on that screen who you can relate to, then that means that you know, you can relate to the series and start to actually really engage. And I think it's important to actually have a look at how different, and it's the surprise. I think it's the surprise factor is what's amazing. Someone like Sia, this series, I don't know if you've got your favorites, or if you've, you know, paid attention, if you can remember their names, but Sia is actually one of our really, I think she was a wild card, you know. This is someone who grew up in Thailand in extreme poverty, and most of her survival skills were born out of necessity as a child. And then she's grown up and become an ultra marathon runner. So that, you know, you sort of go, okay, so there's this skill set that she learnt because she literally had to survive using those skill sets as a child. Didn't necessarily keep practicing those as she got older, and then became an ultra marathon runner. So we know she has endurance. So then the question becomes, can someone who has learnt survival born of necessity and has proven endurance outdo someone else who has, you know, traditional survival skills, or who's grown up in the outdoors camping? So it's really interesting to marry skill sets, characteristics, and psychology all into one, and then just look at how human behavior and then the landscape plays a role as well. So we just want to have as many different people represented as we can on that screen, which is what makes the texture interesting as you go through.
100%.
This is SBS Spice.
I would love to know, because you actually don't get access to much of the footage till after the series, because the contestants have to film it themselves. And it was like some crazy figure, like 3,000 hours of footage that get put down to 10 hours for one season.
You know what? Even higher than that. Last season was 6,000 hours. So
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's a crazy effort for your editing team to go through. But I would love to know how, you know, your experience kind of reflects or mirrors the experience that you see on screen. So I'd love to know what was one of the most memorable moments that you watched on the show after being there that, you know, had a proper reflection on after you came back?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a tough question. Do you know what? There are so many, that I could probably refer to, but one of them would probably be season two, the winning moment on season two. I don't know if you remember that, but that really threw me on the day. We were not anticipating it. We went to do a med check on the winner while we waited for his partner to arrive.
Yes, and I remember this.
And this had never happened before. Yeah. And I was, pardon the French, I was myself because I didn't know what to do in that moment. It hadn't been done before. Here we had the winner that we had to medically extract. So honestly, I think I went into autopilot on that day. So watching it back was almost like seeing it for the first time. I think I was numb in the moment and it was all a haze. We had to get this winner out and I was like, what do we do? What do we do? So that's probably a really memorable one for me, watching it back later on. Was like, okay, it worked. There was a lot of belief in that too.
Can we also talk about the task of the crew as well? Because I want to know how big is the crew that comes along to be on the sidelines, I guess, of the show happening, and like how cut off are you from what's actually happening on the ground with all the contestants?
It's actually, in television terms, it's a relatively small crew that actually works on alone, but it's an incredible crew. They're tougher than the average production TV crew. If you say yes to this, you're saying yes to a gig that takes you into a remote area. We're living remotely as well, and the crew are, they're doing it just as tough in so many ways. I mean, we get catering. We don't have to go out and find our own food and shelter, so that's kind of nice.
You have seasonings. Yes, you have salt.
So that's not too bad. Can't complain about that. But they are living remotely, and we're living very close to the contestants' area. But, you know, the hard thing for the crew is that they're going through all of those, what do you call it, becoming accustomed to a new landscape, like Finland, short days, the dark, the cold, but also there's no end date for the crew, so we're all beholden to the cast deciding when the series ends. So, you know, big commitment from the crew.
It is crazy because I think it goes into the 60-70 days that some of these contestants are out there, the winners are out there for. So it is a waiting game, I guess. I'd love to now look into the future of Alone Australia, specifically with the kinds of contestants you're looking for. I'd love to know, what do you think contestants from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds can bring to Alone Australia?
Look, I think they can bring something fresh, and I think that they can bring experiences that they probably don't even realise they have. I think there's very often a reluctance to step forward because, especially if you're young, you think, oh, maybe I can't do this. But I think there's a lot of examples in the series so far for you to look at youth. I mean, Jasper was one of our youngest people so far, you know, and he did so well. Sia is someone who is not your typical survivalist who stepped forward and gave it a red hot go. And I think bringing your own culture into this series is educative. And I think there's so much that people don't realise that they have, whether it's cultural tenacity, whether it's stories from your culture that will help get you through, whether it's learnings that you possibly don't even realize that you have in terms of survival. If you've gone fishing and hunting, if you've got a sense of how to build a fire and keep that going, you know, Arash is an example of that. Someone who's done it really tough in life. If you have survived, if you've overcome obstacles, and I think a lot of people from culturally and linguistically diverse cultures innately have obstacles to overcome on a daily basis that are usually greater than the average Joe. So I think that don't discount that mental and emotional grit. If you've got that, if you've got emotional grit and mental fortitude and you've overcome obstacles in life, sometimes that, we talk about the physical game and the mental game, don't discount what you can bring to the table in that sense. Your story is going to be a great story to tell, and your attempt at survival and wild living is one that we all want to see. We want to see we want to see it change all the time, and we want to see different people step up.
I think I will have to mention watching Arash's story on Alone Australia was quite compelling, very gripping, and also important to see, because the circumstances in which, and I'm not going to give spoilers, I'm not going to share what's happened, but the circumstances in which his story pans out in the show kind of was, you know, a testament to how resilience works in these kinds of circumstances and how people understand the situations they're surrounded in. And, you know, what you kind of have to tap into to make sure that you are also present and then you're okay, and what the team also did to make sure that he was okay. So when I watched his story, it made me realize that this is actually something that's possible and that it's worth trying and worth understanding who you are, because as isolating as it seems, you are taken care of, and it is much of a test for yourself as it is a competition show for Australia. And so I think that's one of the big takeaways. A lot of the commentary online was just a bit dismissive of what the actual experience was for Arash. I found that there was a lot of people saying, you know, maybe he shouldn't have gone on the show, maybe he shouldn't have participated at all, or maybe the producers had to understand that this could have panned out differently based on his experience. But it was important to watch, I think, and in that circumstance, I have to, you know, do a round of applause for you guys as well for making sure that he was okay and able to be able to
Keep himself safe. I mean, it takes a lot. I think it takes a lot for someone like Arash to step forward and say yes to coming on a show like this, and giving this experience a shot. And I really hope, I know that there was some negative commentary online, but there was also a lot of people that reached out to me and to other producers and to him, and in his defense online, to say this was real. This was a real eye opener. I had a lot of people, I think, or we had a lot of people do a privilege check to go, geez, we're lucky that we grow up in this country and we never have to go through the sorts of things that he's been through. So this is where I hope more people like Arash come forward, because the only way that we can grow in empathy as humans and become a more cohesive Australian society is if we all understand each other better. Mm-hmm. And if we want to understand each other better, then we need more representation on screen, and we need 100%. More stories like that on screen, because every story is a valid story, and there aren't enough of the Arash stories and the Sia stories on our screens. So I really hope that they have inspired more people to step forward, because I think people underestimate what they've got in their pocket as new migrants or as second generation migrants, first generation migrants. There's a wealth of experience and a richness of culture and tenacity and grit and resilience that I think people forget that they've got, that is worth quite a lot. And I hope that Arash and Sia have encouraged people, and I hope that they've been beacons of come give it a go, because that's what they were hoping to achieve.
To
achieve that, so I hope that's worked.
Yeah, you beautifully summed that up, and I definitely would love to see more stories like that. So this is for our listeners. We are having a casting call for the next season of Alone Australia, so put your name down, because I'd definitely love to see more stories like Sia and Arash's as well. My final question for our chat, we're going back to the idea of touching grass and how more Gen Z millennials are kind of like fighting it out online, being like, you got to touch grass. Now you got to touch grass. You got to become more in touch with the surroundings, your surroundings and nature, essentially, and be more outdoors. And Alone Australia is one of those competition shows where the contestants aren't really interacting with each other, you know, which is quite unique in itself. It's the fact that it's a competition, but you're facing the main protagonist and antagonist, which is nature. So what has the show taught you about how we value connection in a hyper-digital world? And do you consider being alone more of a blessing or a curse?
Ooh, I think there's you wrapped that up really well. You're good.
It got me thinking as well, because I couldn't answer that question. I was like, let me ask Rima, because she might have the answers.
Do you know what? I think there's two things in that. I think there's the isolation and the alone. I think there's two things. There's the touching grass and there's the isolation. And I think in a digital world where we aren't touching grass, it's a danger. Get outside, take your shoes off, and let your skin touch grass and soil, And I know that it sounds like woo-woo, and I know that Gina did it in season one and said, I never wear shoes. But it works. It really does work. And even, I mean, we can't escape the digital world that we live in, but balance is important. Mm-hmm. And so I think a big learning is how important nature is, how important letting our eyes look at green. The color green is the most, it places the least strain on our eyeballs. Even just scientifically, we know that nature is good for us. It's good for our mental health. And that grounding, I think, alone just teaches us time and time again. We see people going on the show that have health issues that come out better because of that time alone and that time in nature. We see it with neurodiverse people going into nature, actually really finding that it calms them. So on that, in that sense, I think we learn that getting outside and touching grass is really important. In terms of isolation, I think the lesson that we learn is that people need people, right? Mm-hmm. So we have to balance it. Time alone in nature is fantastic. Time in nature with other people is even better.
Look, I feel like this is the sign to do like a group hike somewhere or join Alone Australia, but that people element won't be there. So pick your challenges, make your choices. Mine is probably just going down to Coogee or Bondi and having a nice time in the water. So I'll stick with
that. I think you should apply for the show, Sahela. I think you should put your application in.
Look, I'll give you a fun fact about myself quickly. I was a girl guide for like, I don't know, 20 years of my life. And I was doing more camping than the average person. And I loved it. I also really loved a hot shower. And being able to season my food. And so I you know what? Maybe give me 5 years to do a bit of training and then I'll see you there. I'll see you in Finland or Aotearoa.
I'm going to give you one, Sahela. Come on. You can do this.
Okay. All right. I guess my name's on the list already. So I guess I'll see you soon. Thank you so much, Rima, for joining me on SBS Spice.
Thank you so much for having me. And please apply.
You're with SBS Spice.